Side 6, The Legend of Luke, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 224.
Luke, we're sorry we raced ashore and ate that fruit. 'Twas silly of us. But we'd like to offer a hearty vote of thanks to you for saving our lives. You're a true warrior.
Luke held up his paws to silence the cheers.
Aye, I saved you because I was able to, mates. Pity I wasn't there when the red ship hit the Northland shore. Every night and day I think of my son Martin back there growing up without a mother to care for him, nor a father with me off here chasing the red ship. But we'll catch her, I swear we will, and I'll make the name Viludescar just a dirty memory in the minds of honest beasts.
The crew went off to their sleeping places as the ship sailed south in the soft, warm night, each with their own memories of family lost or left behind. Luke stood in the prow, keeping watch, lost in thoughts of Martin's small figure on the strand, waving his father's old battle sword. He stared forlornly at the gentle bow wave dispersing into the calm, dark sea.
Someday I'll come back and find you waiting for me, son.
25. On an island many leagues to the south, black smoke billowed above the crackling flames of what had once been a peaceful community of squirrels. Vermin, armed to the fangs, roamed in bands through the forest lands, slaying any beast who dared to oppose them. Screams rent the air, whips cracked as pitiless rogues rounded up those left alive. Bound neck and paw into a straggling line, the bewildered captives were dragged out of the sheltering trees into the dunes above the tide line. Akla, the ferret mate, sniggered evilly, watching the prisoners' horror as they glimpsed their home-to-be, the red ship Gorleach, riding at anchor in the sea offshore.
"Move yourself, me beauties. You'll soon find you're a snug little berth aboard the pretty red boat."
Viludescar sat on the beach, chin on the bone handle of his scimitar, pensively watching while Perig, his bosun, forced the terrified squirrels to kneel and bow their heads before the master of the red ship. Vilu stayed silent until the pitiful heap of provisions and plunder was piled in front of him. Lazily, the stoat's eyes flicked over the crew beasts standing around the pile.
"Is this the best you could do?"
One, a burly weasel called Ripjaw, shrugged.
"That's all we be finding, Cap'n."
Vilu stood slowly, his eyes fixed on a necklace of yellow beads which Ripjaw sported about his neck.
"So, where did you get that trinket, my illiterate friend?"
Ripjaw glanced down at the necklace with his good eye.
"Oh, dis. I take him off a dead beast, Cap'n."
Vilu's scimitar made a noise like an angry wasp as he slew the weasel with one powerful stroke of the sharp blade. With a look of bored disdain, he flicked the necklace from Ripjaw's severed neck onto the pile.
"Must I keep reminding you addle-brained fools that all loot belongs to me? You do not steal from Viludescar!"
He turned to the prisoners, as if noticing them for the first time.
You're a pretty wretched lot. No mind, though. You'll soon learn to pull an oar, either that or die. Well, lost your tongues? No beast got anything to say?"
An ancient squirrel, silver-gray with uncounted seasons, raised his bound paws and pointed at Vilu.
"The one that follows upon the wave will steer you one day to your grave."
The stoat could not explain the shudder that ran through him, but it was gone in an instant. He dismissed it, observing to Akla, who stood awaiting orders,
"I make it a rule never to take notice of threats by those I've conquered. If any of them were true, I'd have been dead long ago. Take that dithering old relic and the rest of his tribe aboard the Gorleach and chain them on deck."
The captives were being moved off when wild commotion broke out at the woodland fringe. More than a score of crew beasts fought wildly to control a single squirrel. Vilu leaped nimbly onto a grass-topped dune, viewing the scene with evident enjoyment. noosed ropes, held the maddened squirrel by her paws, neck, tail, and waist. The vermin dug their footpaws into the sand, hauling on the lines to keep them taut and prevent her attacking them. She was a huge, sinewy creature with unusually black, shining fur that glistened in the sunlight. Though wounded and scarred in several places, she heaved and bucked against the ropes, sending vermin sprawling, bearing strong white teeth at them. Stopping safely out of reach on his perch, Vilu smiled.
Whoa! What have we here? A real fighter?
The sea rat Grig, his paws cut and burning from rope friction, reported in a strained voice,
"This one's killed four crew single-pawed, Cap'n! 'Tis like trying to hold a pack of sharks at bay."
Vilu leaped down from the dune.
"Hold her tight now."
Advancing on the bound squirrel, he soon had his scimitar tip under her chin, forcing her head back.
"Be still now. I am Vilu Daskar, and I could kill you with a flick of my blade. Be still."
Snorting for breath against the noose around her neck, the squirrel fixed her blazing eyes on the stoat, hatred and loathing ringing fearlessly in her harsh voice.
"I know who you are, scumface. Let's see you put down that blade and loose me. I'm Rangavar Foeseeker, and I could rip you to bits without need of a weapon to do the job."
Vilu pressed his blade point harder, causing a drop of blood to stand out against the jet-black fur.
"Rangavar Foeseeker, eh? Hearken, then. You're in no position to throw out challenges, and I've no intention of fighting you. I don't do battle with my slaves."
Rangavar tried to push her chin further onto the blade.
"Coward! Then slay me, and be quick about it!"
Vilu withdrew his scimitar, shaking his head.
"Never thought I'd live to see the day, a berserk female squirrel. No, no, my friend, I'm not going to slay you. What a waste that would be. With mad strength like that, you could do the work of a score of ore slaves alone. A few seasons of Bull Flay's whip and short rations will humble you. Down on the bottom deck, front row. The sea spray day and night should cool you down a bit. Take her away. You won't break me, dirt brain!"
Rangavar yelled as she was being dragged off.
"Don't close your eyes to sleep while Rangavar Foeseeker is aboard your cursed ship."
Vilu Daskar picked up a pawful of dry sand and watched the breeze carry it away, remarking to Grig,
"Huh. Insults and threats. They're like sand in the wind to me, Grig. Here one moment, gone and forgotten the next."
Minus the use of oars, using only her sails, the red ship coursed south. Bull Flay, the chief slave driver and his assistants, unchained all the galley slaves and herded them up on the trireme's high main deck. The Gorleach's new squirrel captives were shocked by the sight of the oar wielders. Starved to emaciation, hollow-eyed and ragged, barely alive in some cases, the wretched slaves blinked against the bright afternoon. Bull Flay cracked his long shark-skin whip low, pulling several of the slaves flat as it curled around their footpaws.
"On your knees, you worthless fish bait! Don't you see the captain's present?"
Rangavar had been chained and covered with a weighted cargo net through which she watched the scene. A huge balk of timber had been attached to a rope reeved through a block halfway up the mainmast. Vilu stuck his scimitar into the mainmast at shoulder height.
"I've brought you 36 new oar beasts, Bull Flay. How many do you need?"
The big fat weasel saluted with his fearsome whip.
"I'll take every one you got, Captain Vilu."
The pirate stoat signaled for some refreshment and a seat. Hurriedly, four crew members brought his chair, a flagon of his favorite damson wine, and a grilled fish. Seated comfortably, he picked delicately at the fish and sipped wine from a crystal goblet, watched by the hungry slaves. Wiping his lips on a silken kerchief, he nodded briefly to his chief slave driver. Bull Flay grabbed the rope which had been reeved through the block and hauled on it until the balk of timber was hoisted level with the scimitar sticking from the mast.
haul the wood this high, or else!"
He let the bulk drop to the deck. The weary oar slaves stood in line for their turn to haul up the bulk. Then he picked up his whip and cracked it over the new arrivals.
"Come on, you lot, get below. We'll get you chained up to an oar nice and tidy-like. Ha, ha, ha!"
Getting the black squirrel Ranguvar below was an awesome task. Keeping her bundled in the cargo net, a score of vermin dragged her through the decks until she was at the front seat of the vessel's bottom level. 8 of the sea rogues suffered wounds and injuries, but they finally got the berserker chained alone to a long, thick oar handle. Ranguvar sat relatively quiet. She waited until the other oar slaves were brought down and shackled into place at the sweeps. She questioned one, a tired old otter, who looked as if he had seen many seasons slaving.
"What was all that about up on deck, the timber and the rope? Why did you have to haul it up, all of you?"
The otter blinked back a tear from his craggy face.
"Didn't you know, mate? Vilu Daskar and Bullflay got to have their bit of fun. 36 new oar slaves means they got to get rid of 36 old uns. So they finds the sickest and weakest by making us hoist the log."
"What happens to those who can't haul the log?"
Ranguvar could not stop herself asking. The otter's husky voice shook as he explained.
"That's when the real sport starts, mate. They sails the red ship out till lands too far away for a fit beast to swim back to it, and they runs out a plank. Vilu gives the poor creatures their freedom, tells them they're free to swim back to shore, and forces them to walk the plank."
Ranguvar's fur stood up on the nape of her neck.
"Do any ever make it, friend?"
"What do you think? You saw the state of some of those slaves. If and the big fishes don't get 'em, the sea does."
Ranguvar turned and murmured softly.
"Well, at least you survived it. What's your name?"
Bowing his head until it touched the oar, the otter replied,
"Norgal's my name. My father's name was Drenner. He used to sit where you're sitting now. That's his oars you're chained to. My old dad was one of those who couldn't haul the log." Slash! Crack! "Shut up, you scurvy bilge swabs!"
Slave Master Bullflay swaggered up to his rail, directly in front of Ranguvar. He wielded the whip at Norgal, but the black squirrel sat up straight and took the blow. A big skinny rat positioned himself alongside Bullflay. Picking up a drumstick, he stood ready at the big drum which was used to keep the oar slaves pulling in time with each other. Bullflay winked at him, nodding toward Ranguvar.
"See that, flea bit? Captain Vilu said this squirrel's a real tough un. We'll have to pay some special attention, won't we?"
Fleabit's narrow frame shook with unconcealed glee.
"Special attention, right, Chief? We'll learn her."
Ranguvar's piercing stare raked the rat scornfully.
"What could I learn from you, cockle brain?" Crack!
Bullflay's whip struck her. Ranguvar transferred her dead stare to him without even blinking.
"Is that the best you can do, barrel belly?"
Choking with rage, the burly weasel flogged away at his new oar slave, using all his strength. When he finished, his stomach was heaving in and out, and both his paws were shaking violently with the exertion.
"You! You dare talk to slave master Bullflay like that? I'll flay you to doll rags!"
Ranguvar, who had ducked her head to protect her face, raised her eyes. There was death dancing in them as she growled at Bullflay.
"You big, useless lump of mud! One day I'll kill you with my bare paws, even if and I have to bite through these chains to get at you. Remember that, weasel!"
Bullflay could not bring himself to answer or raise his whip again. Ranguvar's eyes had frightened him. He strode off down the walkway, laying left and right with his whip at the other oar slaves.
"Silence there, quiet, and be ready to row when my drum starts to beat, if you want to keep fur on your backs."
2 hours after daybreak next morning, a sea rat called down from his watch in a crow's nest.
"Away to the north! A sail, Cap'n! A sail!"
Vilu Daskar leaned out over the stern of the Gorleach, shading his eyes, peering hard at the faraway smudge.
"Sail? Are you sure? What kind of craft is she?"
"Too far off to tell, Cap'n, sir, but 'tis a sail for sure."
Akla kept the tiller steady, awaiting Vilu's order. Striding the afterdeck, the pirate stoat stroked the yellowed bone handle of his scimitar pensively.
"A sail, eh? How far off are the Twin Islands, Akla?"
"We could make 'em by tomorrow midday, wid all sail in full speed on the oars, Cap'n."
His eyes still fixed on the far-off object, Vilu replied, "Too fast. We'd lose her. No ship can keep up with mine under full sail and oars. Take her to half sail, and tell Bullflay to set the rowers a steady beat. We'll let her keep us in sight, and that way we'll land at Twin Islands tomorrow night. Set your tiller south, and a point west." The red ship sailed off on her new course, with the whips cracking on all three decks below. Oars rose and fell, pulling the Gorleach through the waves. The fresh captives groaned miserably as they bent their backs under the lash. 26. Verg snuggled deeper in his hammock. Morning sunlight streamed through the cabin window, and he tried to ignore it, closing both eyes tight, but he could not close his ears to the raucous duet which the cook and his assistant were yelling from the galley. Other crew mice were already awake, hurling objects at the galley door, haranguing the singers within.
"You'll turn the grub sour with that noise! Aye, belt up, you two! Stop that awful racket! I thought some beast was trying to squash a dozen frogs!"
But Bo and his assistant Cardo were in full cry, and not about to give up for mere threats and insults.
"Ho, what you give to a saucy crew? Stew, stew, stew! What's better'n than a bowl of stew? Why, a bowl of stew or two! We fries the varnish off the mast, then add some old rope ends, and a cap'n's boots all boiled up slow. Good flavor to it lends. So scoff it up, 'tis good for you. Stew, stew, stew. Made with a drop of lantern oil and a barnacle or two, some fine sail threads and fish's heads, then roast the cook's old socks, and add to that some of the fat they use to grease the locks. Ho, stew, stew, loverly stew. No skilly and duff or brown burgoo. Just swallow the lumps that you can't chew, and fill a plate for your worst mate, then sit and watch him tempting fate. With face so green and nose all blue, stew, stew, stew."
Luke was guiding the tiller, smiling as he listened to the crew voicing their doubts about breakfast.
"Do you really think they mean it, Cordle?"
"I don't know, mate. Maybe they're just joking."
"But they wouldn't use lantern oil and lock grease, would they, Verg?"
Verg winked at Luke as he answered Denno, who was prone to bouts of seasickness at the slightest thing.
"Who knows, mate? Old Bo's a gratin' for playin' pranks, and I remember that salty stew Cardo made when we first set sail. What do you think, Luke?"
The warrior was hard put to keep a straight face.
"No, Verg, I don't think Bo and Cardo would do that to our victuals, though I couldn't find my sea boots this morning."
The cook and his assistant staggered out of the galley, bearing between them a steaming cauldron. Denno's usually ruddy face took on an unhealthy pallor.
"Urg! I ain't eatin' none of that stuff!"
Grinning wickedly, Bo dipped a beaker into the cauldron.
"What? After all the blinkin' trouble we went to preparin' this delicious stew? Now see here, Denno Milado, I'm going to see you eat this, even if I have to feed it to you myself. It'll put the jolly old roses back in your cheeks. Now open your mouth wide, old chap."
"Yah! I'm too young to die."
The crew of the Sena shook with laughter as Bo chased Denno round the deck with a beaker of stew.
"Oh, come on, you great big silly. Stand still and open wide."
"Get away from me, you lop-eared poisoner! Help! Somebody stop him! Do something, you rotten lot!"
Bo pursued Denno from stem to stern, stew slopping from the beaker as he coaxed and cajoled.
"Never grow up strong and handsome like me if you don't eat all your blinkin' brekkie up, what?"
Denno scrambled at the mainmast for the crow's nest, with Bo scaling the rope ladder close behind him. When he reached the topmost point, Denno suddenly yelled,
"Sail! I see a sail!"
Bo grabbed his footpaw, chortling.
"No excuses now, laddie buck. I'll pour it down your ear if you don't hold still."
Luke's sharp command caused the hare to release the crew mouse.
"Bo, let him be. Are you sure it's a sail, Denno?" "Aye, Luke. I saw it a moment ago, but it's gone now."
Bo let the beaker drop and clambered swiftly up alongside Denno, his keen eyes following the mouse's paw.
"Over there it was. South. Maybe a touch west."
The hare concentrated his gaze upon the horizon for a while. Then he climbed down to the deck and made his report to Luke.
"There was something out there, but bad weather's rising from the southwest. Sea's gone quite choppy and the clouds are lowering. Mayhap 'twas a ship. Couldn't really tell."
Luke came to a decision speedily.
"Verg, steer her over that way. South, going west. Gall, Doolum, Cordle, pile on all sails. Bo, get the food to my cabin, and the rest of you, make sure everything is battened down tight. Looks like we're in for a storm."
When the orders had been carried out, the crew gathered in Luke's cabin to share the meal. Contrary to Denno's belief, the stew was delicious. Bo was quite huffy that any beast should think it otherwise.
"Huff! Never cooked rubbish or wasted good food in all my life, what? Vegetable stew, sir, with lots of carrot, dandelion root, leeks, dried mushrooms, onions, taters, and my own special barley and oat dumplings. Puts fur on the chest, a glint in the eye, and a splendid spring to the paw. Stuff to give the crew, eh, Luke?"
The warrior cleaned his bowl with a chunk of bread.
"It certainly is, mate. Do you think we should allow Denno a second helping?"
Denno licked his spoon sheepishly.
"Not my fault. The way they were singing that song, well, I thought..."
Bo kindly ladled him another portion.
"Thought, laddie? You know what a short-sighted bowl thought? Listen, and I'll tell you. A short-sighted bowl climbed out of his hole, his glasses he'd lost, I fear. Some blossom petals in the breeze fell on his head, oh dear. I thought 'twas summer, but winter's come, 'tis snow, that bowl did shout. I think I'd better go and warn the creatures hereabout. He bellowed round the woodland wide, I think 'tis going to freeze. He shooed some sparrows from a nest, back to your hive, you bees. And squinting dimly at the ground, he lectured tufts of grass. All hedgehogs now should be indoors till winter tide does pass. Go join your family round the fire. Don't sit there all alone. 'Tis no fit weather for a mole, he scolded at a stone. And as for you, he told a bush, you badgers aren't too smart. I thought you'd be the first to know when winter's due to start. So gather round and listen all, my moral's clear and true. I think 'tis best to stop and think when thoughts occur to you."
As Bo finished his poem, the ship gave a lurch. Luke saved the stew cauldron as it slid by and laid it safe on the deck, wedging it twixt the table and his chair.
"Don't panic, crew, it's the bad weather. Sit tight and wait it out in comfort. There's little else we can do. I'm going out on deck. Verg, you come with me. We'll take tiller watch two at a time until the storm passes. When you go out there, use ropes and tie yourselves to that tiller. I don't want any crew washed overboard."
The little ship began to sway crazily as mounting waves buffeted her up and down, side to side. Luke gritted his teeth as he and Verg strove to hold the tiller on course. Spray lashed both mice until, despite their heavy cloaks, they were saturated. A high-pitched whine, like that of a stricken beast, rose above the storm's din. It was the wind, playing on the tightened rigging ropes as if they were the strings of some instrument. Pawing salt water from his eyes, Verg glanced anxiously up at them.
"If we don't slack off some sail, this gale might rip us to pieces, Luke. Can't we take her to half canvas?"
The warrior stared straight ahead into the onslaught.
"'Tain't possible, Verg. I couldn't risk the crew's life by sending them up into the rigging to shorten sail. Also, I'm near certain 'twas the red ship that Denno and Bo sighted. I don't figure on losing her. We're bound to follow."
Bo and Cardo struggled back to the galley across the seesawing deck, bearing the empty stew cauldron between them. Coinciding with the boom of thunder overhead, the galley door slammed open wide. A flash of white lightning illuminated the scene as they were both swept inside by a wave crashing over the ship. Smoke wreathed them as the galley stove was extinguished into a hissing mess by the water. The sea cook staggered inside, yelling to his assistant,
"Lock all you can in the cupboards! Keep the blinkin' vittles dry! I'm going to fetch a rope and secure those water casks before they start rolling about!"
No sooner was Bo out on deck again than a crackling bolt of chain lightning struck the Sena's foremast. Like a dry twig, the stout timber split, sending the long lower jib swinging like a scythe. Verg saw the danger and shouted,
"Bo, look out, mate!"
As Bo turned, the jib caught him a mighty clout in the midriff, hurling him ears over tail into the sea. Luke was already on the move. Releasing the tiller, he quickly tied the stern line about his waist and plunged in after Bo, with Verg bawling above the melee,
"All paws on deck! Hair overboard! All paws on deck!"
Down, down went the warrior, into a world of boiling confusion, with the roar of storm and sea ringing in his ears. Luke felt his progress checked as the line pulled tight and immediately began striking upward, his eyes searching the racing, bubbling surface for signs of the hair. Air started escaping his nostrils and mouth as he fought his way bravely to the wave tops. Gasping for breath, he surfaced in a deep green valley. Then the maddened seas crashed down upon him. Next moment he was swung up high on the crest of a huge roller. Luke took the opportunity to scan swiftly about for Bo. Below him he could see the stern of the ship, but no other sign of life upon the watery wilderness. Then he was dropped into another deep trough, only to be swept aloft again. About his middle, the line tightened painfully as he was pulled along in the ship's wake, spitting seawater, paws flailing, searching constantly for Bo, despite his own predicament. Berg called out to the crew,
"Haul Luke in, mates, afore the line snaps and he drowns! Bo's gone, can't do nothing about that! Haul in there!"
Willing paws heaved on the line. Luke felt himself pulled through the buffeting waves and relaxed, half stunned and too helpless to resist. Verg was waiting with a dry cloak and a beaker of elderberry wine, and Cardo helped to carry Luke to his cabin. The warrior coughed and spluttered as the wine revived him. He sat up, shaking his head.
"It was too wild to see anything out there. No sign of Bo?"
Cardo was weeping uncontrollably.
"None at all. That old hare was my best matey and the finest cook afloat. The sea's a cruel beast, cruel."
Luke passed the remainder of the wine to him. "Drink this now, Cardo. 'Tis a terrible thing, poor Bo. But we must concentrate on keeping this ship afloat, or we'll all finish up on the seabed if in this storm keeps up." He was interrupted by joyous shouts from out on deck as the ship gave a mighty shudder and stopped rolling.
"The wind's turned! We're saved, mates!"
Wrapping the cloak about him, Luke hurried from the cabin. Evening was streaking the skies westward, and to the east the thunder boomed dully with a sporadic bolt of lightning far off. Verg scratched his head in amazement. The wind was still blowing, but strong and warm, flattening the sea with its power. The Sena was shuddering lightly, her damaged rigging thrumming as she responded to Doolam's touch on the tiller and sped southwest. Relief among the crew was evident. Call laughed,
"Ha, ha, ha! Quickest thing you ever did see, Luke!
One moment, we're near sinking in a storm. Then, swift as a flash, the wind turns east and suddenly veers west. We're saved!
Dusk was creeping in. Luke's cloak fluttered straight out behind him as he stood, with the crew, looking back over the stern at the distant area where Bo had been lost. Cardo had composed a short verse.
Our friend was taken by the sea. He rests now, who knows where. A good and generous beast he was, a brave and cheerful hare. We've got no flowers or blossoms to cast out on the deep. No stone will ever mark the spot where he sank down to sleep. Bo, feathering Saul, call sporting him, sweet as long summer days, your memory lies in our hearts. You'll be our mate, always.
The crew stood in silence, heads bowed, tears falling onto the deck. Every beast had loved the hare dearly. Luke took a deep breath and wiped his eyes. Cordle, take first watch aloft. Keep your eyes peeled for the red ship. Call, your turn at the tiller. Right now, while me and Cardo put the galley straight and piece together a meal, the rest of you get rope and pitch. Bind that mast as best you can. Then take in all sails. She's running fast enough in this sea. In future storms, I don't want to see any beast out on deck without having a lifeline attached to him. It was a terrible thing that happened to Bo, but I know he'd want it to serve as a lesson to us all. The sun's fiery orb sank below the westering horizon, and the Sena sped smoothly into the night. A splash announced that the shattered jib had been jettisoned overboard. Luke stood at the galley fire, which he had rekindled, longing to hear just one merry chuckle from Bo, but knowing it was not possible. They would have to sail onward without their friend, the hare. 27. Vilu Daskar was used to freak weather in tropical waters. When the storm struck, he ordered his oar slaves put to work. With no sails to aid them, they were forced to row double time as the drums pounded out and whips cracked. Daskar himself took the wheel, tacking the Gorleach skillfully on a direct westerly course. As the tempest began slackening, he swung the vessel due east, came around the far side of the Twin Islands, and anchored a safe distance offshore behind the easternmost of the two massive hills. Savoring the night air, Vilu sat out on deck, sating his appetite on a plate of baked fish and a flagon of nettle beer. Akla the ferret hovered nearby, watching the stoat pick his teeth with a fishbone. Vilu dabbed at his mouth with a silken kerchief and stood up. Akla gazed anxiously at the remains of the meal, hoping Vilu had finished. "Had anything to eat yet, Akla?" Edging eagerly near the barrel-head table, the ferret bowed cringingly.
"No chance to eat during that storm, Cap'n."
Vilu held out a paw, as if inviting Akla to finish the meal, then clouded the ferret's face sharply, knocking him to the deck. "Go and get your own food, famine face." From below decks, there was a bellowing roar which mounted to a screech, quickly followed by the thudding of paws up the companionway. Bullflay, the weasel slave master, assisted by some of his cronies, stumbled out onto the deck. He was pressing a wadded rag to staunch the blood from one side of his head. Vilu could see he was in great pain. "Nasty injury. How did you come by that, Bullflay?" The weasel's toadies took up the tale with relish.
"'Twas the black squirrel, sire. Aye, the berserk female tore Master Bullflay's ear off, sire, with her teeth. She'd have had his other ear if and we hadn't rescued him, sire. Batterin' a shark, that'n is. No use flogging her, sire. Two whips Master Bullflay's broke on her. Two!"
Vilu sat back, a smile hovering across his eyes.
"So, and what would you have me do with this berserk warrior, Bullflay, my friend?"
The weasel's flabby jowls quivered with rage.
"I want you to let me kill her, sire. Tie rocks to her neck and paws and slide her into the water, nice and slow. Let the other oar slaves watch her drown, bit by bit. Baloo nodded understandingly. You'd like that, eh, Bullflay? A drop of blood spattered the deck as the slave master nodded.
Aye, sir. I'd like it fine after what she did to me.
Baloo dallied with the bone handle of his scimitar.
I've no doubt you would, but I'm captain aboard this ship, not you. I decide who lives or dies, and that squirrel is not ready for death yet. Cut her food and water for a few days. That should do the trick.
Bullflay was about to protest when he saw a dangerous glint in Villu's eyes. He saluted sullenly.
As you say, sire.
Villu smiled sweetly, perilously. Precisely, my lard-bellied friend. As I say. He beckoned to Akla, who was still crouching on the deck, holding his face where he had been struck.
Stop slobbering about down there. Get up. Take four crew and go ashore. Climb that hill and mount a lookout for the ship that was following us. Report to me when you sight it. I'll lay an acorn to an apple that they'll do like any other vessel does when they come to Twin Islands. Ferrig, you know what they'll do?
The Sea Rat bosun shook his head.
No, sire.
Baloo closed one eye and squinted toward the channel separating both islands.
They'll sail straight up the middle of there, always do. We'll be waiting for them when they emerge from the channel mouth and meet them head-on with our spike. Hey, Parag?
A quiver of evil joy shook the bosun.
Stick up like a net on a pin, sire.
Baloo filled a beaker with nettle beer, passing it to Parag.
Like a net on a pin. What a quaint turn of phrase.
Far below, on the bottom deck of the trireme, Norgal the otter sat on the second row, staring in admiration at the back of Ranguvar, sitting alone on the front bench. Lashmark scored and quartered the black squirrel's back, where Bullflay had done his best to flog her into submission. He had failed. Every slave chained to an oar throughout the length and breadth of the Gorleach knew it. It brought fresh life and a spark of defiance into the hearts of even the oldest and most timid. Norgal heard the heavy paw step of Bullflay descending, and murmured softly to Ranguvar,
"'Tis Bullflay, matey. Get yourself ready for the worst. Like as not he'll slay you for biting off his ear."
The black squirrel's eyes glowed with fierce battle light.
"Ha! Not before I've bitten his other one off!"
"Silence down here! One more peep and I'll flay your backs to the bone, you bill scrapings!"
A hush fell as Bullflay's whip cracked aloud. Still holding the rag to his ear, he strode up and stood by the drum. Raising the whip high, he glared at Ranguvar.
"And you'll be the first to get flayed, squirrel!"
The eyes of Ranguvar bored into her hated enemy.
"And you'll be the first to die, lard bucket!"
Bullflay quailed under the berserk stare of Ranguvar. He let the whip fall and strode off, muttering,
"We'll see how bold you are after a couple of days without victuals or water. That'll cure you."
However, when food was served up to the oar slaves, even though it was only a crust, one bowl of thin gruel and a cup of water, every beast saved a small portion. When the oar decks were quiet, the food was passed from paw to paw, until it reached the captive berserker. Mid-morning of the following day saw Doolam, whose watch it was at the topmast, bellowing,
"Land ho!"
Luke joined him at the lookout point. The high, humped hills of Twin Islands stood out fresh and green in the warm sunlight. He patted Doolam's back.
"Well done, mate. You'll get an extra portion at lunch for being the first to spot land."
Doolam sighed mournfully. Luke was a warrior, not a cook.
"And will I have to eat it, too?"
Luke tweaked his friend's ear playfully.
"There's gratitude for you. After me slaving over a hot galley stove since dawn, making skilly and duff for you."
Doolam sighed wistfully.
"My old mom used to make the best skilly and duff on the Northland coast."
Luke chuckled as he climbed out of the rigging.
"Well, I ain't your old mum. Mayhap we should have brought her along, Doolam." "Aye, mayhap we will next time. She's as good with a ladle as you are with a sword."
Dear old Mum, your little Martin used to come round to our cave for her apple pies. Sweet apples, golden crust, steamin' hot, dusted with spices and warm arrowroot sauce poured over 'em. I can taste 'em right now.
Luke helped Doolam down to the deck.
Well, let's hope she's still feeding my son. Make him grow up big and strong. Now, will you stop nattering on about those pies? 'Tis turning me off my own cooking.
Huh. That wouldn't be hard to do, Verg remarked in passing. Luke heard him.
What was that you said, Verg?
I said the sky's far up and blue, mate.
Luke glanced upward, remarking quietly to Verg.
There's far worse cooks aboard than me.
Verg cupped a paw to his ear.
What?
The warrior winked slyly at his friend.
I said, the sky's as blue as the sea.
Afternoon shadows were starting to lengthen as the Sena lay offshore of the Twin Islands. Luke called up to the topmost watch.
Any sign of the red ship?
Cardo shielded his eyes.
None at all, Luke.
Verg leaned against the tiller.
So what now, mate?
Luke studied the Twin Islands carefully before replying.
No good chasing out into unknown waters with the Sena in a bad state. No telling what might become of us. I think we should sail her into that channel which separates the two islands. 'Tis calm and sheltered in there. We could make the Sena shipshape again, fix the mast properly, make a new jib, and sew up those torn sails. Sort of put everything to rights before we set sail again, eh, Verg?
Aye. Sounds sensible. But what about the red ship, Luke?
Well, we ain't in a fit condition to chase her right now. We'll have to make up 2 days when we're sailing again.
Strange, though, Verg. I've got a funny feeling that red ship isn't too far off somewhere. Mayhap 'tis just a fancy and it'll pass.
Right, head her in there, mates. We'll make fast to the east channel bank about halfway along.
Later that evening, Akla tapped nervously at Vilu Daskar's splendidly carved cabin door. Vilu put aside the charts he and Perig were studying.
Come!
The pirate Stoat's voice called imperiously. Akla entered respectfully and made his report.
Sire, 'tis like you said. Toward evening, a ship sailed into the channel and put in halfway up on the east side.
Vilu could not resist a triumphant smirk at Perig.
Just as I predicted.
He turned back to Akla.
What manner of vessel is it?
Like an old corsair bark, Cap'n. But ain't no corsairs aboard of her. They're all mice. Tough-looking beasts. She took some storm damage, sire. I think they've put in there for repairs.
Perig drew his cutlass and licked the blade.
It's dark outside, Cap'n. We could come storming up the channel like an auk onto a wren, just when they're least expecting us.
Vilu shook his head despairingly at the sea-rat bosun.
No, no, my impulsive friend. Why wreck a ship that's in need of repair? Leave the mice a while. Let them work and sweat fixing up their craft. Get it all good and seaworthy again. Then we'll swoop on them and sink it. Let them see all their efforts destroyed. Much more subtle, don't you think?
Perig thought for a moment, then his features creased into an evil, gap-toothed cackle.
Ha 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 ha! You're a bad 'un, all right, Cap'n.
Vilu adopted a modest expression.
Oh, I do my best to be the worst. Akla, what was the name of this ship?
I don't know letters, sire. But Fleabit does, and he said 'twas called the Sena, I think. Aye, that's the name, Sena.
To both sea rogues' surprise, their captain poured wine for himself and them. Akla and Perig sipped appreciatively at their goblets. Vilu Daskar's wine was the best. Vilu himself merely wet his lips as he mused.
Sena. What do you think, my friends? 'Twould have been Sena to give Twin Islands a miss?
Akla and the bosun stared at him in dumb silence. Vilu put aside his wine and sighed.
That's called a play on words, you bumpkins. Saner, sana. 'Twas a pun, don't you see?
The pair stood in slack-jawed silence, trying to understand what their captain had said. He turned his back, dismissing the slow-witted crew beasts.
Dim-witted idiots! Get out of my sight before I lose patience with your thick-skulled ignorance! Begone!
Akla and Perig set their goblets down gingerly, not daring to finish the wine, and hurried from the cabin. Vilu's former good humor had deserted him. He detested being surrounded by stupid, witless vermin. Slouching in his chair, he began to focus his mind upon the Sena and her crew. Why would a vessel of such small size be pursuing a ship as huge as the Gorleach? What possible harm could a score or so of mice inflict upon Vilu Daskar, terror of the seas? They must be totally insane, or recklessly brave. Well, one way or another he would soon find out. Ha! And so would they, the fools.
Vilu left his cabin and strolled out on deck, almost colliding with a sea rat called Drobna. His claws dug viciously into the rat's cheek, drawing the frightened rodent close. Vilu smiled disarmingly at him. Tell me, what chance does a minnow stand if it chases a shark?
Drobna's cheek was pulled awkwardly on one side, and spittle trickled from his lips as he blabbered out a reply.
None, sire! Minnow again a shark's got no hope!
Vilu released him, patting Drobna's cheek tenderly.
Well said, my friend, well said. Even a moron like you can solve a simple problem now and then.
He strode on up the gently swaying deck, leaving Drobna rubbing a stinging cheek, completely baffled. 28. Luke was already up, having taken last watch of the night. The Sena lay moored on the east bank of the canal-like channel running between Twin Islands. Luke leaned on the starboard rail, watching the daybreak still and humid with leaden, overcast skies. Cardo came out of the main cabin bearing an old shield that he used as a tray. On it was a beaker of hot mint and dandelion tea, accompanied by a warm scone spread with stiff comb honey. He winked at Luke.
"Morning, mate. Here, get that down you. I was up a while before dawn, so I tried me paw at baking scones."
Luke seated himself on a coil of rope, sipping gratefully at the hot tea and nibbling gingerly at the scone. He surveyed the island's two massive hills, which looked silent and oppressive with a heavy gray sky cloaking their summits in mist.
Wouldn't surprise me if we had a spot of rain today, Cardo.
Well, this scone tastes good, matey. Where'd you learn to bake stuff like this?
Cardo stared down the channel to the open sea beyond.
'Twas a recipe Bo taught me. I miss that old hare. He was a good friend to me.
Luke put a paw around Cardo's shoulder.
Aye, so do I. Strange, but we never know the true value of friends and family till they ain't with us any more. Come on, matey, buck up. I can hear our crew waking. Moping about won't help us. Best to keep ourselves busy, eh?
The crew of the Sena had nothing but praise for Cardo's good cooking, and it cheered him greatly. After breakfast, Luke reviewed their position and gave orders.
Cardo, see if you can cook up a lunch to show us that breakfast wasn't just a flash in the pan. Cordle, pick a couple of good patchers to help you repair the sails. Call, Dano, and Doolam. I want you to strip down the mainmast and bind it round tight with strong, greased line. That willow never broke, it only cracked. 'Twill be good as new, once it's bound and tightened proper. Berg, get your weapons and come with me. We're going up that big hill yonder. Let's see if we can find a decent piece of wood to fashion a new jib from. Right, off to work now, crew, and keep your wits about you and both eyes open. 'Tis strange territory.
The hill turned out to be a complete disappointment. There were no proper trees with trunks and stout limbs growing there. Luke snorted in disgust as he swiped with his sword at one of the tall, feathery bushes, which
which grew in profusion on the slopes. Ferg picked up the branch his friend had lopped off and inspected it.
Ah, too thin and brittle. Wouldn't even make decent firewood. Won't find a decent jib spar growing hereabouts.
Luke peered uphill into the warm, humid mist.
Looks pretty much the same all over, Ferg.
Why don't we go back down and try searching the channel edges for a good piece of driftwood? Might have been some timber washed up there.
Ferg?
What's the matter, mate?
Ferg was rubbing his paws together furiously and flapping them as if he were trying to fly.
Yuck! Some kind of filthy insects! Must have come off those bushes! Look! They're all over me paws!
Luke pushed his companion forward, urging him downhill.
Well, don't stand there flapping your paws, mate. Let's get to the channel. Good salt water'll wash 'em off.
Farther uphill than the two mice had ventured, Vilu Daskar's spy patrol lay among the bushes. They watched Luke and Ferg hurry off down to the water. Ringpatch, the ferret in charge of the group, said,
If they'd reached the hilltop, they'd have seen the Gorleach anchored below on the other side. Good job they never.
Yeah, they would have never got past us.
A small sea rat called Willig scoffed airily.
There was only two of them. We'd have chopped them up for sure.
Ringpatch eyed him contemptuously.
Huh. What do you know about it, Spindleshanks? Those two mice looked like warriors to me. I wonder why they turned back and ran off.
Said it was some kind of insects.
At least that's what I thought I heard one of them say,
replied one of the patrol vermin.
Huh, insects,
Willig sneered.
They can't have been much as warriors if they ran from insects.
Suddenly, one of the patrol leaped upright, hitting himself left and right with both paws and dancing wildly.
Yah! Insects! I'm covered in them! Eee!
Tiny, moist, brown slugs from the surrounding bushes were all over the patrol, writhing and crawling, sticking to any patch of fur they came in contact with. The vermin thrashed about in the bushes, beating at themselves.
Yerk! Get 'em off of me! I can't stand insects!
Ugh! Filthy, slimy little worms!
Youch! They sting, too! Ow! Ow! Ow!
Spah! One got in me mouth! Ooh!
Ringpatch dashed off uphill.
Patrol! Retreat! Let's get out of here afore they eats us alive!
Stumbling and crashing through the bushes, they retreated over the summit, driven by the sticky slugs to seek a saltwater bath. Ferg had just finished scouring his paws in the channel shallows when he cocked an ear upward.
Listen, did you hear something? Like a kind of high-pitched squealing noise? Came from up near the hilltop there.
Luke stood still, cupping both paws about his ears.
I heard it, mate. Though I couldn't imagine anything but insects wanting to live on this forsaken place.
Probably some seabirds, feeding off those horrible grubs.
Ferg dried his paws in the coarse grass.
Well, let's hope they eat 'em all. I detest squigglies.
It was noon by the time they got back to the ship. Denno was atop the mast, binding the last bit tight with greased line, and he saw them approaching.
Ahoy, crew! Looks like Luke and Ferg found us a jib spar.
Willing paws helped the pair carry a long, stout limb of some unidentifiable wood aboard the vessel. Call inspected it, nodding his approval.
Tough, oily-looking wood. Let's strip the bark off and measure it agin the broken jib for size.
It proved an ideal replacement for the old spar. By midday, they had it fixed. Rigging and fresh-patched sails were hauled, and Luke paced the deck, checking all was shipshape.
Good as new, the old tub looks, mates. I'm famished. What happened to that lunch Cardo was supposed to be cooking?
Cardo popped his head around the galley door.
Go and seat yourselves in the cabin. 'Tis about ready.
The Sena's cook had triumphed again. Cardo had used most of the dried fruit to make a hefty steamed pudding covered with a sauce made of pureed plums and arrowroot, and there were beakers of old amber cider to drink with it. Luke voted the meal so delicious that he proposed Cardo be made ship's cook for life. Ladle clutched to his chest, Cardo bowed proudly as the crew applauded.
Ho-ho! Good old Cardo! More power to your paw, mate!
Any second helpings there, Cookie, me darling?
Aye, and keep them scones coming for breakfast every day. What's for supper tonight, matey? Anything tasty?
Knowing he had a newfound power to wield, Cardo laid the law down to them, shaking his ladle officiously.
So I'm ship's cook now, eh? Then cook it is. But I ain't washing dishes and scouring pots and pans, so there.
To appease his touchy cook, Luke sided with Cardo.
Agreed. From now on, every beast washes their own dishes. We'll take turns with the pots and pans. I'll do first duty.
A splatter of heavy drops pattering on the bulkheads announced the arrival of rain. Ferg opened the cabin door and slid his plate and beaker out onto the deck.
I vote that the rain washes our dishes tonight, buckos.
Soon, raindrops could be heard pinging merrily off the crew's dishes, scattered across the deck. Through the open door, Luke watched a distant lightning flash, and he heard the far-off rumble of thunder.
Looks like we're in for heavy weather, mates. Best batten down and lay up in this channel till it's over.
Rain continued into the late evening, but the crew were snug and dry in the cabin, glad of the respite from sailing. Cardo sat apart from the rest, his face gloomy. Verg tweaked the cook's ear.
Come on. What's up now, you great misery guts?
Cardo shrugged.
Don't know, Verg. Just got a bad feeling, and I can't explain it. Something seems wrong.
Denno nudged Verg, pulling a wry face at the unhappy cook.
Oh, dearie me. Just like the old farm mouse, nothing's right.
Call winked at him.
Which farm mouse was that, matey?
Denno began tapping a beat on the tabletop.
There was an old farm mouse lived in an old farmhouse who always thought of a reason to rant and complain again and again, whatever the weather or season. If rain came down, he'd scowl and frown, shake a paw at the sky, and say, "Rains like these are good for the peas, but they ain't much use for me hay." Then if wind came along, he'd change his song, crying out, "Oh, woe, lack-a-day, 'tis all I need, a wind, indeed, to blow all me apples away." He'd gnash his teeth about shaded wheat at the sign of a cloud in the skies, and the very sight of cloudless sunlight would bring tears to both his eyes. He'd simmer and boil as he pawed the soil and got himself worried and fussed. "Look at that sunlight, 'tis far too bright. 'Twill turn all me soil to dust." Oh, botheration, trouble and toil. Life don't get peaceful or calmer. If I'd gone to sea, a sailor I'd be, instead of an old mouse farmer.
The crew were all laughing heartily when Cardo said,
"What's so funny? We were all farmers once."
The laughter died on their lips. Luke patted Cardo.
"Aye, you're right there, mate. Farmers we were, fighting the weather and seasons to put food on the table. We didn't have much, but we were happy with our wives and families until Vilu Daskar and his red ship showed up. Now we're sea mice, rovers, fighting evil and ill fortune. Though I tell you this, one day when 'tis all over, we'll return home and pick up the threads of our old lives again."
Outside, the elements increased their fury. Thunder reverberated overhead. Rain lashed the heaving seas, and flaming webs of chain lightning threatened to rip the darkened skies with their ferocity. The crew of the Sena, without guard or watch on the gale-swept decks, allowed sleep to close their weary eyes. Most of the night, the storm prevailed. 3 hours before dawn, a strong, warm wind blew up from the south. Driving the tempest before it like a rumbling cattle herd, it hurtled on northward. Peace and calm was restored to the seas in its wake. Humidity returned, bringing with it a dense, foggy bank which hung over the twin islands and their channel like a pall. The Gorleach put out to sea. Then Vilu Daskar ordered her turned about, a league out, to face the channel. An hour before dawn, he gave the command.
"Bull Flay,
Tell your drummer to beat out full speed. Don't spare the whips. I want this ship to run up that channel as if hellhounds were chasing it. Stand ready, my scurvy sea rogues. There's slaves to be taken.
29. Verg woke with a raging thirst. He got up quietly so as not to disturb his sleeping crewmates and picked his way through the darkened cabin to the door. It was foggy on deck, silent and damp. Verg padded to the galley, dipped a ladle into the water barrel, and drank deeply. A second measure of water he tipped over his head to awaken himself properly. He was about to start lighting the galley fire from last night's glowing embers so that Cardo would have a good fire to cook breakfast when he heard the sounds. It was like a steady drumbeat and a deep swishing noise which grew louder by the moment. The noises seemed to be coming from somewhere farther up the channel. Verg made his way to the forepeak. Leaning out, he strained his eyes against the blanket of milky white mist. The sounds increased in volume, and the Sena began to bob gently up and down on some kind of swell. That was when the world turned red. Towering over him like an immense leviathan, the Gorleach came thundering down upon the ship's Sena. Verg was flung high into the air and landed hard on a rock in the shallows, swallowed by the merciful blackness of unconsciousness. A horrendous rending of ship's timbers rent the air as the Gorleach plowed into the Sena, ripping the entire starboard side out from stem to stern. Masts fell before the wicked iron spike on the red ship's prow, snapping off like dried twigs. Vilu Daskar roared with evil joy at the sound of screaming crew beasts in shock. Half-stunned, Luke splashed about in the water. He grabbed a floating object for support. It was Cardo. The dead cook's eyes stared unseeingly into his until Cardo sank slowly beneath the channel. Luke came to life then. Bellowing like a creature possessed, he seized a rope trailing from the red ship's side and began hauling himself, paw over paw, up the Gorleach's massive hull. Soaked, bruised, and weaponless, the warrior climbed with the speed of fury, grappling his way over carved galleries, swarming over the heavy, sea-wet mats of rope fenders. Vilu Daskar was just turning to shout further orders to his vermin crew when Luke came storming over the gallery rail. He was upon the pirate's stoat like a wolf, grabbing him around the neck. Both beasts crashed to the deck, Luke's eyes filled with bloodlight as he throttled his mortal enemy. Vilu Daskar could do nothing against the warrior's furious strength. He saw crew beasts dashing to his aid and managed a panicked gurgle. Akla swung a belaying pin once, twice, thrice to the back of Luke's unprotected skull. Another two crashing blows laid the warrior mouse low, and Vilu slipped from his faltering grasp. Vermin crewbeast rushed the stoat captain to his cabin, where he lay on a table, making a croaking sound as they forced warmed wine between his lips. He reeled off the table, nursing his neck with a silken cloth.
"Der we sink 'em?"
Bullflay stared at Akla.
"What did he say?"
The ferret turned to Vilu.
"Don't try to talk, sire. Your throat's damaged. Aye, we sunk her, all right. Crew's just dragging aboard any mice that are still living."
Still clutching the silken cloth about his neck, Daskar staggered out on deck. Bullflay waddled ahead of him, drawing a cutlass and straddling the limp form of Luke.
"This is the one who strangled your lord. Let's see if I can take off his head with one swipe."
Vilu kicked the slave master, sending him sprawling.
"Gah! I want him alive! Arr!"
The pirate stoat tottered unsteadily back to his cabin. When the door slammed, Fleabit whispered to Grig,
"Talks awful funny, don't he?"
"So would you if you'd been near throttled or death," Grig whispered back. "Better not let him hear you say that he talks funny, or you won't have a tongue to talk with at all, matey."
Doolan was chained to deck rings like the others of the Sena's crew who had survived the ramming. He dabbed gently at the back of Luke's head with his wet tunic. but it was some considerable time before the warrior began to stir and show signs of coming around. On his other side, Denno pressed Luke gently back to the deck.
"Lie still, mate. You should be dead by rights, the pounding your head took back there. I saw it as I was hauled aboard."
Luke lay still, eyes closed, head throbbing unmercifully.
"What about our crew?"
He felt Denno's tears drip onto his paw as he said, "There's only us three left, Luke. You, me, and Doolam." Luke felt numb. He could hear his own voice echoing in his ears.
"I saw Cardo, but Call and Cortle and the others. Ferg, where's Ferg?"
A sea boot thumped cruelly into his side. Bosun Perig stood over them, grinning.
"Fish bait, the lot of 'em. Bit of a mistake, us sitting your ship so hard. Should have just sneaked up and burned it. Then we would have caught you one by one as you dived in the water."
He kicked Luke once more, obviously enjoying himself.
"Huh. Three miserable prisoners. 'Twas hardly worth it. Three mice. Ha! May as well call it two, 'cause Cap'n Villu's got special plans for you, bucko. I never knew a beast laid paws on Villu Daskar and lived to see the sun go down. I'd hate to be you, Mouse. Death'll come as mercy to you when the Cap'n's finished with you."
But Luke was hardly listening. He was consumed with grief and guilt over his slain crew. Mentally, he told himself that this was the second time he had lost dear ones by leaving them unguarded. It did not matter what happened to him now, though there was one thing he longed for ere death claimed him. One chance, just one opportunity to slay Villu Daskar. Twin Islands lay bright and still in the afternoon sunlight. The fog had gone, so had Villu Daskar and the Gorleach. Slowly, Verg became aware of a tickling sensation on his face. A tiny hermit crab, burdened by a periwinkle shell, was dragging itself across his cheek. He brushed it aside and sat up, wincing. From jaw to ear, his cheek was purple and swollen. Finding a paw full of cool, wet kelp, he bathed it gingerly as memory flooded back. Asena, her crew, Luke, the red ship looming out of the fog. Verg leaped up. Sloshing through the shallows, he climbed up on his ship's wrecked hull, looking desperately this way and that. Far off, out to sea, sailing north by east, he saw the Gorleach plowing the main. Scrambling down into the wreckage, Verg ignored the splitting ache in his face and head and shouted aloud, "Luke! Cordle! Denno! Ahoy, mates! Any beast aboard? Call! Doolam! Where are you?" Ripping away broken spars and dragging damp canvas out of his way, Verg forced an entrance to the shattered main cabin. Call was there, pierced through by a splintered bulkhead spar, his body swaying gently in waist-deep seawater. Yelling in horror, Verg fled the cabin, flinging himself from the wrecked vessel onto the shore. Cardo was the second one he found, lodged underwater beneath the prow. Verg sat on the warm sand, his head in both paws, sobbing uncontrollably. He was alone, all the friends he had sailed with from the Northland shore gone, slain or taken captive aboard the hated red ship. Sometime toward evening he fell asleep, stretched out above the tide line, numb with grief and aching all over. How long he lay there, Verg had no way of knowing, other than that it was dark when he opened his eyes. But that was not what had wakened him. Some beast was close by. Verg did not move. He lay fully alert now, with his eyes half open, scanning the area around him. He heard noises, a damp, scraping sound coming from behind the Sena's smashed stern. Verg rose until he was on all fours, carefully, silently making his way to the water's edge. Gritting his teeth with satisfaction, he found a broken spearhead with half the shaft still attached. Wading quietly into the water, he made his way along the Sena's hull to the stern. He saw a dark shape on the beach, scraping away at the sand with a chunk of flat wood. Gripping the broken spear tightly, Verg sneaked up from behind and flung himself upon the creature, yelling as he locked a paw about its neck.
"Yah! You filthy murdering scum! I'll kill you stone dead!"
However, killing the creature was not so easy. It lashed out with long hind legs, batted Verg hard with the chunk of wood, doubled up, and sent him sailing over its head. Like a flash, his adversary was upon him, forcing his face down into the sand. A familiar voice rang in Verg's ears.
"I say, steady on there, old lad. What?
Verg managed to push his head up and shout,
"Bo! It's me, Verg!"
The hair rolled off him, pulling him upright and dusting sand away from his face.
"Well, bless my paws, so it is. Why didn't you say so instead of pouncing on a chap like that? Didn't hurt you, did I?"
Verg could not help himself. He hugged Bo and kissed both his cheeks soundly, weeping unashamedly.
"Oh, Bo, Bo, I thought you were drowned long ago."
The hare managed to extricate himself from the tearful crew mouse and held him off with both paws.
"Well, if I wasn't drowned then, I soon would be, with you jolly well crying and weeping all over me, what?"
Verg stood staring stupidly at Bo.
"Then you weren't drowned when you fell overboard?"
Bo could not resist striking a noble pose.
"Drowned? Me, laddie? Pish, tush, and fiddledy, what's it? Us feathering soul cost-fording hams don't sink that easily. Just 'cause some confounded storm chucked me in the briny, and not for the first time, let me remark. Well, says I to myself, let blinkin' Ma Nature use other fools as fish food, not me, sir. So I struck out for the old terra firma, and stapped me vitals if I didn't land up at Twin Islands. Had to live on the far isle, of course. Pesky little insects on this one would eat a body alive if you let 'em, what?"
Immensely cheered by the fact that he was no longer alone, Verg smiled and clasped his friend's paw firmly.
"But you're alive. That's the main thing."
The irrepressible hare winked fondly at Verg.
"Pretty much alive, apart from having me paw squashed by some hulking great mouse. Righto, companion of mine. Come on. We'll cross the channel onto my island and have a bite to eat while we swap yarns. How's that suit you, old mouse chap?"
Verg released Bo's paw and turned away.
"There's something I've got to do first. My shipmates."
Bo sniffed. One of his long ears flopped down to wipe an eye before he answered.
"Say no more, friend. I buried them myself while you were sleeping. Just finished the job when you sneaked up and tried playing piggyback with me, what? Don't fret, old fellow. I've put the Sena's crew to rest in the shadow of their own ship."
Together they waded into the channel. However, Verg still had a question to ask.
"Was the whole crew slain, Bo?"
"Sadly, most of 'em were, Verg. Though I never found Luke, or what's-his-name, and the other chap, or Doolum and Denno, that's 'em. Which means they were certainly taken for slaves aboard that foul vessel Gorleach. So, all in all, there's 4 of the old gang left. 5, counting yours truly. Hang tight to my paw now. Gets rather deep here. We'll have to jolly well swim for it. What? Chin up and strike out."
When they reached the far island, it was quite a climb to Bo's den. He had made it over the far side of the hill, facing out to the open sea. Because of this, Bo had not known about either the Gorleach or the Sena until it was too late. But, as Verg realized, there was little he could have done anyway against the Red Ship's crew. The den was a small cave halfway down the big hill. Bo had made it comfortable and foraged around the island to provide food. Kindling a fire, he put dandelion tea on to brew and produced a meal with his own gatherings and a few things they had managed to salvage from the Sena's galley. Warming himself by the fire, Verg allowed Bo to inspect his wounds.
That's a rather attractive shade of purple on your face there, old thing. Have to make a compound, take out the pain and swelling. Cheer up, Verg. You'll be as good as new in a day or two, my old nautical matey."
Verg heaved a sigh and gazed out to sea.
"What do we do then, Bo?"
The hare sliced himself a wedge of fruitcake from the Sena's stores, adding it to his plate of island salad.
What do we do then?
Why, we sit here and chunter while we grow old together, like two proper desert isle hermits, my friend.
Huh.
And if you think that, you're a nincompoop.
Do?
I'll tell you what we're going to do, laddie buck. Make a boat from the wreckage of our ship, Sena, and sail after the Red Ship. Rescue our friends, and if we get half a bally chance, we're going to put paid to that evil blackguard who calls himself a captain. Disgrace to the blinking rank, right?
Berg locked paws with his friend.
Right, Bo. And the sooner we get started, the better, mate.
30. The crew of Vilu Daskar had a special name for the Gorleach's bottom deck, the Death Pit. After 2 days chained to an oar down there, Luke knew the place was aptly named. In hot weather, it was airless and foul. When seas were rough, it was awash with stinking bilge water. Wretched slaves, chained in pairs at each oar, port and starboard, lived and died there under the lash of Bullflay, the fat, sadistic slave master, and Fleabit, the drummer, his cruel assistant. Both these creatures delighted in tormenting the helpless oar slaves, withholding drinking water, taunting the sick, and generally enjoying the misery they heaped without mercy on their helpless victims. Luke found himself up at the forward end, pulling an oar alone, singled out for special treatment under Bullflay's watchful eye. Before chaining his paws to the oar, Perig shackled the new slave's footpaws to a long running chain, stapled at intervals to the deck. The sea rat bosun pointed out the reason for this.
Just in case the oar snaps and you think you're loose to escape, well, you ain't. This here chain joints you all to the ship. If it sinks, you go to the bottom with her.
If Luke turned his head slightly right, he could see Doolum and Denno, manacled to an oar on the other side of the aisle, about 3 rows back. Bullflay's whip cracked, its tip catching Luke's ear.
Get your eyes front, mouse, or I'll flick 'em out with this whip. You're down here to row, not look at the scenery.
He strode off down the center aisle, laying about him.
Bend your backs, lazy scum! Put some energy into it! Come on!
Fortunately, a strong breeze sprang up later in the day. Fleabit stopped drumming and gave the order to ship oars. A cup of brackish water and a hard rye crust was issued to each slave. Bullflay and Fleabit went up on deck to eat in the fresh air. Luke tugged at his paw chains, calling across to his neighbor, "Do they often leave us alone like this?" Norgal, the otter, seated behind on the right, answered,
"Huh. Where are we going to run to, matey? Or are we fit enough to bite through these chains?"
Another voice growled,
"I'll find a way to break 'em someday."
Luke could not help himself staring across at the creature who had spoken. Directly opposite, chained singly to an oar, just as Luke was, sat a ferocious black squirrel. Everything about her, from the scars to the savage glowing eyes, bespoke the fact that here was a warrior. He felt an immediate kinship with the dangerous beast. She spoke again.
"Look around. All these poor creatures are defeated because they are slaves in chains. But Vilu Daskar could not chain the heart, mind, or blood of Ranguvar Foeseeker. I'll bite through these chains one day, then I'll slay Vilu Daskar, Bullflay, Fleabit, and as many of them as I can until they bring me down and slay me."
Luke stretched his paw until the chains cut into him.
"I am Luke the Warrior, and I swear on the memory of my dead wife, Sena, that we will break these shackles together, Ranguvar Foeseeker. I will stand beside you when the time comes, and we will take many with us before we fall."
Ranguvar stretched her paw across to Luke. Where the chains cut the flesh, blood mingled from both creatures' wounds.
"We will do it together, Luke. I have waited long for another warrior to come to the Red Ship. You are here now."
Gazing into the fearless dark eyes of Ranguvar, Luke had no doubt that they could accomplish anything together. Murmurings came from all around the bottom deck. Denno spoke for every beast as he called out,
"We'll be with you to the death."
Luke smiled grimly. "Good. But we need a plan." By next morning, Bilu Daskar had regained his voice, though he still kept the dark bruises on his neck covered with a white silken scarf. Accompanied by Parag and Akla, he descended to the lower deck and paid Luke a visit. The stoat captain held the scarf end to his nose as the vile reek of the death pit assailed his nostrils. Luke kept his eyes down as Daskar addressed him.
"So, Mouse, why does a creature in a small ship follow my gore leech? Surely you must have known you had no chance against the red ship. Why did you do it?"
Luke made no reply. The blade of Vilu's bone-handled scimitar slid along Luke's neck and lifted his chin until he was looking into the stoat's eyes. Still, he did not speak. Daskar raised his eyebrows and nodded.
"Speak, or I'll slit your gizzard. Why were you following me?"
Though the sharp blade was pressing on his neck, Luke closed his eyes and held the silence.
"I warn you, Mouse, talk, or you're a dead beast."
To add weight to the threat, Vilu swung the blade high over Luke's head, bracing himself for the strike.
"No, wait! Don't kill our captain! I'll tell you, sire!"
All eyes turned on Denno, who was waving his paws agitatedly.
"Please, spare the captain, please, sire! I'll tell you all!"
Vilu strode over to Denno, chuckling.
"Loyalty to one's captain, a wonderful thing! I wish that my crew of sea scrapings showed that faith in me. But then they wouldn't be sea rogues, would they? So, loyal Mouse, save your captain's life. Tell me why your silly little tub was pursuing the mighty gore leech."
Denno's face was a picture of simple honesty as he explained. "Do you recall the Northland shore, sire? We followed you from there to avenge our families." Vilu's paw tapped the bone scimitar handle pensively.
"Northland shore, Ah, yes, I remember now. Bunch of mice, fools, burning a fire like a signal beacon on the beach. Aye, they were all either too young, too old, or too weak to make oar slaves of. We slew them for fun and ate their food." "Oh, dear, were they your families?" "Well, never mind. They provided a bit of amusement for my crew. By the way, where were you and all the able-bodied ones while this was going on, eh? Probably hiding somewhere to save your own skins, I shouldn't wonder."
Seated next to Denno, Doolam's fetters clanked as he struggled to rise, tears streaming down his cheeks.
"That's a lie! If we'd have been there, we would have fought you murderers down to the last beast!"
Vilu smiled condescendingly. "But instead, you chose to go off and gather daisies." Doolam's whole body was shaking with rage.
"No, we never!" he blurted out. "We were up the coast by the tall rocks, keeping lookout while Luke and the others buried our tre—"
"Shut your mouth, idiot!" Luke shouted.
Vilu turned to Parag and Akla, smiling triumphantly.
"Unchain these two and their captain. Bring them to my cabin."
As they unshackled Luke, he glanced across to Ranguvar and winked. The plan was beginning to work. The three mice were hustled roughly into Vilu Daskar's cabin, where they were lined up in front of an ornate table. Lounging behind it, in a magnificent carved chair, Vilu watched as his servants laid out wine, baked fish, preserved fruits, and bread, fresh from the ovens. He picked at the feast, while Luke and his friends stood dull-eyed and hungry, trying to ignore the wonderful food. Akla, Parag, and Bulflay stood by awaiting orders. Vilu dabbed the silken scarf across his lips, weighing the three slaves up carefully. He addressed Denno. "You, tell me what it is you were hiding up the coast in the tall rocks, but take care. One false word, one little lie, and I will hang both your friend and your captain from the mainmast, where their bodies will stay until they rot and seabirds pick at their bones. But speak truly, and I will give you all your freedom, once I have what you hid in the tall rocks. That is your choice. Now speak. Denno glanced apologetically in Luke's direction, then said, It was the treasure of our tribe, sire. We had traveled many seasons, guarding it from foe beasts. Having chosen the Northland shore as our new home, we searched out a safe place to hide it, among the tall rocks farther north. Luke was glaring angrily at Denno. Vilu smiled at the warrior mouse in mock surprise. Now, now, don't pull faces at your friend. He's just saved your life and bought your freedom. Let's hear you speak your piece now. Tell us about this treasure, or I'll hang both of these mice in your place, and you can watch them dangle. An expression of defeat replaced Luke's glare, and he sighed. Only if you promise to spare our lives and set us free once you have the treasure. Vilu spread his paws disarmingly. Akla, Perig, Bullflay, tell this mouse about my word. The three vermin nodded vigorously.
Oh, aye, the cap'n never lies. You can rely on that, mouse. I'll take me oath on it.
Vilu took a sip of wine and dabbed his lips. See? Luke told him what he wanted to hear. 'Tis a great treasure. Plates, chalices, daggers and swords, all wrought of gold and silver, studded with many jewels. The pirate stowed nodded approvingly. Just as I thought. Now tell me the exact location. Where did you hide it? Luke stared levelly at Vilu Daskar. Only three creatures went among the tall rocks to hide that treasure, myself, Verg, and Cardo. I am the only one you left alive out of the three, so only I know the true location. But I am not a fool, Vilu Daskar. I do not trust the word of a murderer, so I will not tell you, no matter what you do to me or my friends. However, I have a proposition for you. Set sail for the Northland shore, and when we reach there, I will pilot your red ship up the coast and steer you to the spot. That way you will have to keep us alive, at least until you have the treasure. End of Side 6. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.